Thanks, Claire, for those words. And we could spend the whole 20 minutes thinking about just that verse that she mentioned. We could also, so close to Ascension, spend the whole 20 minutes thinking about just the Ascension in relation to Psalm 2. But the main frustration of these talks that I've been doing is that I've had to cut, you know, the whole Bible is open, and unfortunately you just have to focus on a certain amount. So what I'm going to do is largely catch us up in the story up to the end of the Old Testament, and then focus just on Psalms 1 and 2. So these are what we've done so far. We've done Jesus the snake crusher, Jesus the sacrifice, and today is Jesus the king. And it would be useful to keep your Bibles open at page 543 for Psalms 1 and 2, which we'll come to later. So when Jesus died on a cross, there was a sign put above the cross in three languages just to make sure everyone could understand. And it said, King of the Jews. And Jesus being a king means a lot more than him just being a ruler. There's a huge amount of background in the Old Testament about what exactly that means for Jesus to be King of the Jews. And as I said, we'll continue through the Old Testament, and we'll come to Psalms 1 and 2 later to think about just some of what that means for Jesus to be king. So in the last talk, we got up to the people of Israel having been rescued by God from slavery in Egypt. And after the rescue, they travel to the land which God promised to Abraham. But they're scared of the people who are currently living in the land, and so they don't want to enter. So instead, they end up wandering in the desert for 40 years. And that's the book of Numbers. They finally get to the promised land again after 40 years. And just before they enter, Moses retells the whole of the law to them. That's the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy means second law. And up to this point, Moses has been their leader, but they haven't had a king. There's been a few prophecies about a king to come in future. And in Deuteronomy, Moses brings this up again. And he prophesies that the people will ask for a king. They'll want to be like the nations around them, and they will ask for a king. And so Moses sets out the type of king that they need. And in Deuteronomy 17, he says this. I'll read you just some extracts. The king must not acquire great numbers of horses for himself. He must not take many wives, or his heart will be led astray. He must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. When he takes the throne of his kingdom, he is to write for himself on a scroll a copy of this law, taken from that of the Levitical priests. It is to be with him. He is to read it all the days of his life, so that he may learn to revere the Lord his God, and may follow carefully all the words of this law and these decrees, and not consider himself better than his fellow Israelites, and to turn from the law to the right or the left. Then he and his descendants will reign a long time over his kingdom in Israel. Sounds like a good king, doesn't it? So they need a king who doesn't acquire many wives and lots of wealth, and a king who is to follow God's law. And just to be clear, God's law here basically means the Bible. So Moses is either, when he says this law, you know, take a copy of this law on a scroll, he either means Deuteronomy, or more likely he means the first five books of the Bible. But either way, Moses is talking about the Bible here. So to carry on from Deuteronomy, Moses dies at the end of that book, and a man called Joshua becomes their leader. And under Joshua, they mostly conquer and settle the promised land. That's the book of Joshua. And after Joshua dies, the people are constantly turning away from God and being attacked by their enemies. They then ask God for help, and he raises up a leader called a judge. And the people are rescued and turned back to God, but then the cycle comes around again and again with judge after judge, and that's the book of Judges. And Judges is not a good time for the nation. And the book says that the problem was that there was no king. Then there's a lovely little short book called Ruth, which bridges the gap between the time of Judges and the time of the kings. And then there's the book of Samuel, which is where we get our first king. So the people asked for a king, just like Moses predicted. And the first king is called Saul, and he's not so great. And the second king is David, and he's much better. And God makes an important promise to David in 2 Samuel 7, which we had read this morning. And the promise is that one of David's offspring will have a kingdom that goes on forever, and God will have a father-son relationship with that king. And this promise is another expansion of the promise of the snake crusher that we looked at in the first talk, and also the promise to Abraham that his descendants would be a blessing. And so now the story of the Bible from then onwards focuses on David and his sons. because the hope is now in the king. So David's son Solomon is king after him. And the reign of David and Solomon is as good as things get. So there's a variety of good and bad kings after them, but the overall direction is downwards after that point and away from God. So the nation splits up under the rule of Solomon's son, and then is eventually conquered by the Assyrians and the Babylonians. Many of the people are taken out of the land and to Babylon, and this is called the exile. And really, that's the darkest time in Israel's history so far. But after that time, there's a return from exile, and that's the books of Ezra and Nehemiah. And Jerusalem is rebuilt, but things don't get back to as good as they were under David and Solomon. And that's the end of the New Testament. And there's a 400-year break before Jesus is born. So we're caught up in the story, and before we look at Psalms 1 and 2, I just want to mention a few things about the book of Psalms generally. First, it's helpful to know that Psalms is not like a hymn book. Even though it does contain hymns, a hymn book is just a collection of individual hymns, probably arranged alphabetically. With a hymn book, you could swap the order around and it wouldn't really matter, apart from it would be difficult to find them. But with Psalms, it's a very carefully arranged book. You can't swap any of the Psalms around. You can't rearrange the order. So Psalms is divided into five books, actually. There's an intro, which is Psalms 1 and 2. There's the five books, and then also at the end, there's a collection of praise to God, which is 146 to 150. And there's loads of other structure within the book of Psalms. The second thing it's also useful to know is that the people who arranged the book of Psalms did it shortly after the return from exile. So that's right at the end of the Old Testament story. So when they were doing that, the nation of Israel had been through the Old Testament and everything I've just talked through. So they were living hundreds of years after David and Solomon, for example. They'd been through the exile and had been through the return from exile. So let's go on to Psalms 1 and 2. And they form a pair. There's lots of ways you can see this. I'll show you a few ways, which is the repeated words or phrases. So the start and the end is marked by blessing. So the beginning of Psalm 1 is blessed is the man, and the end of Psalm 2 is blessed are those who take refuge in him. In Psalm 1, we have the way of the wicked will perish. And in Psalm 2, we have this phrase, destroyed in your way. And it's basically almost exactly the same wording in Hebrew. And then again, just a repetition. In Psalm 1, we have the blessed man meditating on the law. And in Psalm 2, we have the nations and the peoples plot. And they're actually exactly the same word, meditate and plot. And there are various other repeated words and also structural sort of similarities. So they form a pair. Let's get on with Psalm 1. I'll just read the beginning again. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of mockers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He's like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers. So straight away you might think of an obvious application. If you meditate on the law of the Lord, i.e. read, study, think about, ponder on the Bible, then you will prosper like a strong tree whose leaf does not wither. So we should read the Bible more. And I would genuinely encourage you to do that, to meditate on the Bible day and night. That's a good general principle. But do we want to be getting only general principles from the Bible? Remember what Jesus said in John 5 that we looked at in the first talk. He said, you study the scriptures diligently because you think that in them you have eternal life. These are the very scriptures that testify about me, yet you refuse to come to me to have life. So the Bible without Jesus doesn't give life. General principles don't give life. Only Jesus gives life. So in what way does Psalm 1 tell us about Jesus? Actually, I think it's quite simple. It starts, blessed is the man, and the blessed man is Jesus. Let me give you a few reasons why. Do you remember the bit we read from Deuteronomy 17 where Moses said what Israel's king should be like? Moses said, above all, it's the king who has to meditate on the law, and it's the king who will prosper by doing that. Also, the link between Psalms 1 and 2 comes in. Psalm 2, which we'll look at in a moment, is about the king, a king who is meditating on the law of the Lord. So we have blessed is the man who's meditating on the law in Psalm 1, and we have the king meditating on the law in Psalm 2, and it's the same person. Now, in a way, the blessed man of Psalm 1 could be any king of Israel who loves the Bible. But actually, putting it together with Psalm 2, we'll see it's really about the king who is to come. As I said, the people putting the book of Psalms together were living after David, after Solomon, and after all the kings of Israel so far had shown themselves ultimately to be failures. They were not the sort of king that they needed. They did accumulate wives, they did accumulate horses and wealth. They ultimately didn't meditate on the law of the Lord day and night. Not everything they did prospered, even David and Solomon. And the blessed man of Psalm 1 is like a tree whose leaf doesn't wither and die. But all the kings up to this point had literally withered and died. So the people who put Psalms 1 and 2 here, right at the beginning of the book of Psalms, they were looking at a king who would fulfill all God's promises. They're not looking back to David. They're looking at David's son, promised in 2 Samuel 7, who would be God's son and would be king forever. He's the blessed man of Psalm 1 and the king of Psalm 2. So the blessed man is like this tree planted by streams of water, yielding fruit and not withering. And I think it has a specific tree in mind here, really. I think it's the tree of life that we saw in the Garden of Eden. And the quickest way to see this is actually to look forward to Revelation and see the tree again there. So in the new creation, after Jesus has made everything new, the tree of life is there again and we have access to it again. And you'll see that bit on the screen from Revelation 22, which says, on the side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree for the healing of the nations. So you can see the close similarities there, the tree by the river, it's the fruits, it's the leaves. So it's the tree of life. The blessed man is not just strong by himself, but he becomes a blessing for others. He's a source of life. So we carry on in Psalm 1. Not so the wicked. They are like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. So you've got a very sharp contrast between the blessed man and the wicked. The blessed man is his healthy tree, and the wicked are chaff. So chaff is that rubbish bit from the harvest that you don't want. It's insubstantial. It's just blown away. If you hold it in your hand, you just go, and it's gone. The opposite of a tree. So the blessed man is Jesus, the tree of life, a source of blessing and life, and the wicked are just chaff, completely insubstantial. Let's move on to Psalm 2. It's a psalm about God's king, as I've said. The king is also called the anointed one. And we use a few different words to mean that. So we say Christ, that means anointed one. That's based on the Greek. And we also say Messiah, that means anointed one. That's based on the Hebrew. And Psalm 2 comes nicely organized in four sections. So the first section is verse 1 to 3. I'll just read that again. Why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth take their stand and the rulers gather together against the Lord and is against his anointed one. Let us break their chains, they say, and throw off their fetters. So we have the rulers of the world rebelling against God and against his anointed, his Messiah. And just like we had the tree of life from the Garden of Eden in Psalm 1, there's strong links here, I think, to the fall in Psalm 3. So Adam and Eve were the rulers of the world at that point. And they thought something very similar to verse 3, didn't they? Let us break their chains and throw off their fetters. They thought, God's told us we can eat from any tree apart from this one, but we think he's holding us back. Let's break those restrictions. Let's break those chains. And since then, all of us, all humanity, has been in rebellion against God and against his anointed. The next section gives us God's reaction to this rebellion. verses 4 to 6. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Then he rebukes them in his anger and terrifies them in his wrath, saying, I have installed my king on Zion, my holy hill. So God says that he has installed, or you could say established or set his king. He's established his king. And he's established him on Zion, his holy mountain. And really what that means is that the king himself is holy. The next three verses, we switch to the Messiah, the king, speaking. And he's repeating what God has told him. So you could say he's meditating on the law of the Lord. I will proclaim the decree of the Lord. He said to me, you are my son. Today I've become your father. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth your possession. You will rule them with an iron scepter. You will dash them to pieces like pottery. So the king has a father-son relationship with God. So this is directly in the line of that 2 Samuel 7 promise to David about his son. This is David's son. God has assured this king that he will be the owner and ruler of the whole earth. And the rulers who are rebelling won't be able to stand against this king. Their rebellion is pointless and will come to nothing. The king will find it easy to defeat them, as easy as smashing some pottery, or as easy as blowing away the chaff, you might say. So the promise to David in 2 Samuel 7 is that one of David's offspring would be king forever and there'd be a father-son relationship. Psalm 2 takes this even further. There's the father-son relationship again. But the rule of the Psalm 2 king is over the whole earth. And this king is holy. He's established on Zion, God's holy hill. And so the last few verses give us the logical action the rulers of the earth should take. Therefore, you kings, be wise. Be warned, you rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you be destroyed in your way, for his wrath can flare up in a moment. Blessed are all who take refuge in him. So the Messiah, the King, the Son of David, is the owner and ruler of all nations. And one day he will crush all rebellion against him. So Psalms 2 says the wise thing for rebels to do is to run and hide. But not run away from the king, but run to the king. Blessed are all who take refuge in him, who hide in him. So remember Jesus on the cross with the sign above his head saying, the King of the Jews. So this is the king who died, so you and I can take refuge in him. This is the tree of life, if you like, the source of life. Broken in pieces, so we can eat. Pouring himself out, so we can drink. We're completely defined by our relationship to Jesus. That's what Psalm 2 is saying. When we meet him, it will either be in rebellion, or we'll be taking refuge in him. So Jesus is the blessed man of Psalm 1, the strong tree of life, the source of all life. He's also the holy Messiah, king of Psalm 2, the son of David, the ruler, the owner, the judge of the whole world. So run to him and take refuge in him.